bonds. It's file number 821-1190. As all parties are aware, counsel for the appellant will have 15 minutes for their argument in chief. Counsel for the respondent will have 15 minutes, and counsel for the appellant will have 5 minutes for rebuttal. This matter is being conducted, obviously, by a Zoom argument, although the panel consists of Judge Smith, Judge Klapacki, and myself. Judge Klapacki is having some computer issues, but he is available. Even though you can't see him, he is listening to the arguments and can participate. So I just wanted to advise you of that. So when you hear a voice, you can't connect to a picture, that would be Judge Klapacki. The matter is being recorded and will be available in an audio matter tomorrow, but our court rules prohibit anyone from making their own recording, either counsel or parties who are just listening remotely. So with that, counsel for the appellant, whenever you're ready, you can begin by telling us who you are in a loud, clear voice, please.
Thank you, Your Honor. Eric Rice, attorney for Banks Bail Bonds, LLC. May it please the court. We are here—
Mr. Rice, before you get into your argument, can you help me with the record on a couple of items?
Absolutely, Your Honor.
In your July 7 petition, you spelled out that you made reasonable efforts and that it wouldn't prejudice the state. And the state's response was what?
The state initially submitted a one-page recommendation that the bond be that $10,000 be reinstated without explanation.
Was it based on any factors, anything that would be close to the Shetsky factors? Just 50%.
I don't know, and that's one of my main arguments, is that unfortunately the record is very bare, and I believe a remand is necessary in order for this court.
Let me ask you next question then. On August 17th, you made a reconsideration request. What was in that reconsideration request?
If I can have a moment to pull up the document, but my recollection is that it was asking for analysis of this case pursuant to the Shetsky factors. So
that's the first time the Shetsky factors came up in this matter?
No, the Shetsky factors are listed in the affidavit that was submitted on July 7th.
So that in addition to saying you made efforts and there's not going to be any prejudice to the state, you did go through a number of Shetsky factors and identify them as such?
Correct. Section 6D, as in Delta, of the affidavit, it does list the Shetsky factors, and that's what we're requesting the court to consider the petition based upon.
I have one more question. Back to the August 17th request for reconsideration. The city's response was a recommendation for 50%, no discussion of Shetsky factors, right?
Correct, Your Honor. In that letter, the city identified—
Here's my question, really. Has the state ever identified Shetsky factors and why they were and why they should result in either a no amount return or a 50% return? I see that there was some reference that it was simply the practice, the policy of the city attorney's office to go with 50%. Is that accurate?
That's my understanding, and that's my concern, and why we brought this appeal is because this policy is an alternative framework. And what the bond company is asking—
Here's my question. If the state wasn't willing to address the Shetsky factors on a number of occasions, and the trial court didn't address the Shetsky factors, even though you had apparently addressed them in your original petition, isn't the abuse of discretion obvious? And if it is obvious, why should it go back and why should the city have another bite at the apple? Why shouldn't this court simply find that there was an abuse of discretion and order the reinstatement?
There were a couple decisions cited in our brief where the appellate court did find that the trial court failed to make Shetsky factors and remanded based on that basis. But I believe Your Honor is correct that if the court deliberately instead of inadvertently declined to use the Shetsky factors or adopted this alternative policy, then that may support this court finding that that decision was an abuse of discretion. I argued both in my brief that there are kind of two paths that this can proceed on. And I believe that the facts are undisputed and do support reinstatement under the Shetsky factors. Our main concern in this case is that bond reinstatement petitions be resolved with a clear and consistent standard for bond companies, that the rules don't change based on who the prosecutor is or who the particular district court judge is. In this case, that was part of the difficulty is we submitted a petition based on our understanding that the Shetsky factors would be used. The state offered a response with no explanation and just asking the court to impose a 50% penalty, which was $10,000. The court summarily granted that the state's request. We filed that motion for the letter for reconsideration, hoping to address the issue at the district court and clarify, could we please resolve this pursuant to the Shetsky factors? And again, the state declined to then explain its position under the Shetsky factors. And unfortunately, the district court did not rule on the matter before our appeal deadline was close to lapsing. But there are a number of concerns here that it looks like the first time that the state brought up the Shetsky factors is in its response brief on appeal here, which caused the bond company to take this appeal. And the net effect of this is going to be that in this case, where a defendant was absent approximately 1 month, the undisputed facts are that he met with the bond company and voluntarily turned himself in and the matter was able to progress. There is now a $10,000 penalty that the bond company needs to go to the co-signer, who is the defendant's family, and say, you now owe $10,000 plus costs of appeal, even though the defendant voluntarily reappeared. And by the way, we don't have a good explanation as to why this is occurring, because it does not appear that the state or the judge used the prevailing standard to decide this matter. I also noted in my brief the concerns I had with the state's policy, and I would request that this court at least address those, because it is a policy, and this is not the only case where those have been an issue. And going forward, we want to ensure that there is directive that the court and the parties must adhere to the Shetsky standard. Even if they disagree with it, even if they believe there are shortcomings, you still have to adhere to that standard unless it is changed, unless there's some other avenue, some alternative program, and clearly communicated. The hardship in this has been we started the case under one standard. Apparently, it was considered by the state under a different standard. I don't personally know what the district court ultimately used to make its decision. And then on appeal, the state's response uses a completely different standard. They finally get to the Shetsky factors and raise some evidentiary issues that were never raised at any point prior. And it's hard for the bond company to try to anticipate and guess what concerns are going to be for this case based on who the particular prosecutor is, based on who the particular district court judge is, especially in this case where the surety undertook its responsibility and did its duty. The defendant,
are you claiming that your presentations, both in terms of the original petition and the request for a reconsideration, that you provided the court with sufficient evidence to apply the Shetsky factors?
Absolutely. In the petition, we did note specific efforts that the bond company made contact with the defendant, and then that the defendant met the bond company at the jail and voluntarily surrendered on May 24th. The bond company was able to get the defendant's consent to clear the warrant and turn himself in, and the bond company met the defendant at the jail and confirmed his surrender. Now, in the state's brief, they do bring up the fact that we didn't itemize our expenses, but that's because our expenses are not a basis that we're seeking reinstatement upon. The efforts are sufficiently detailed to give notice of what the specific efforts were. They're not conclusory statements. They're not, the bond company undertook major efforts and the defendant reappeared, which provides no detail. Here, there are specific efforts. The bond company contacted the defendant, encouraged him to turn himself in. The defendant agreed. They met at the jail. He turned himself in approximately 1 month later. To the extent that they need additional elaboration, that would be the opportunity for the state responded. The state could have, in its recommendation, said the bond company has failed to provide sufficient detail, and that would have permitted the bond companies to supplement the record. Instead of guessing what amount of evidence, do we need to basically show photographs of the defendant walking in, and here's the exact time that we walked into the jail, here's our phone records, that sort of thing. What evidence is sufficient to allay any concerns? And same thing with the court. If the court was concerned that additional material was needed to supplement the record, we would have appreciated the court's directive on that, that the bond company failed to present sufficient evidence. And then in my letter for reconsideration, or we could have requested a hearing, some district court judges will issue a written order and say, if you disagree with these findings, you may request a hearing. and then we can present additional evidence, make sure that the record is clear and supplemented. But again, it's hard to anticipate what the correct standard is going to be used when the rule 702 merely requires an affidavit. The case law puts the burden on the bond company to prove its efforts, but here we did. It doesn't say that the efforts need to be proven beyond all doubt. They don't say that you need certain documentary evidence. It doesn't say that you need to have itemized expenses. It just says you need to put forth evidence.
On any of the evidence that you presented, in either the petition or the request for reconsideration, did the state respond in any way to contest the factual claims that you were asserting?
No. In the initial response, the state merely requested a number be imposed for a penalty. In the state's letter responding to our request for reconsideration, the state raised no evidentiary concerns and said that its penalty was based on the seriousness of the defendant's cases, which were domestic-related offenses. Failures to appear on multiple occasions without a legitimate excuse, and the fact that he appeared more than 10 days after the failure to appear. So there the state had the opportunity and was put on notice that we would like more explanation. We would like this considered by the Shetsky factors. And at no point at that time did the state raise evidentiary issues. Instead, the state applied its policy framework and said, under our policy, here's why we arrived at the 50% penalty. And my concern is many of those factors, such as the seriousness of the offense, the bond company has no control over. The bond company doesn't charge the defendant, and the bond company doesn't set conditions of release, which appropriate venue for setting a bail amount and taking into account the seriousness of the crime. All the bond company can do is say, based on this charge, the judge set this amount of bail. The bond company agreeing to act as surety, if the defendant fails to appear in the future after posting the bond, will the surety undertake sufficient efforts to locate the defendant and bring him back before the court? Banks bail bonds agreed to undertake that responsibility, and it did so. It contacted the defendant, brought the defendant back within about a month, which is far shorter than other instances where full reinstatement has been granted, got the defendant's voluntary cooperation. Here, the bond system worked exactly as intended. And if the state disagrees with that, then the state, under the Shetsky factors, can argue why a penalty is appropriate. Let us argue under that standard. Give us notice of what standard we're being used. And if there are deficiencies, give us an opportunity to address them, not in your reply brief on appeal. I don't know if the court has further questions, but I believe that addresses most of the issues that I had about this case. I believe the facts are not particularly complex, but again, the bond company is just asking that a clear and consistent standard be applied, that its efforts be properly considered, and that it be given fair notice of what expectations it will be held to and the opportunity to present evidence and argument to support its case. And here, because those were not met, we would ask that either this case be remanded with directions to apply the proper standard, or because the facts are undisputed and clear, and the standard is clear, that this court fully reinstate the bond without a penalty.
Thank you, Mr. Rice. We'll now hear for counsel for the respondent, please.
Thank you. Good morning. My name is Cliff Berg. I am an attorney with the St. Paul City Attorney's Office, appearing on behalf of respondent, State of Minnesota. I'm substituting for the attorney of record, Stephen Heng. I don't have a lot to add to Mr. Heng's brief.
Counsel, yes. Is it true that you never raised Shetsky factors until your reply brief?
We did not, Your Honor. And if I could speak briefly to that, my understanding of Shetsky and the applicable case law is that the burden to show proper reinstatement of a bond under Shetsky is placed upon the petitioner. Our office was given notice of the bonding company's request, was asked to give a recommendation. My position would be that the original recommendation for reinstatement of 50% of the bond was exactly that recommendation. We would argue that it's on the petitioner to allege that the factors are met under Shetsky and convince the court that it's met its burden. And our position is that that burden has not been met.
Council, would you agree then that the city made no effort to carry its burden with respect to prejudice?
Your Honor, I guess I would again state that my reading of Shetsky and Vang, which we rely on in our brief, is that these are burdens that need to be shown by the petitioner. I would concede that as far as it goes, I don't see anything in the record that indicates an argument made by my office articulating prejudice. But again, I would submit that it's one of the factors that needs to be shown by the petitioner.
It's your argument the state has no burden of proof with respect to prejudice or burden of production even? No burden?
That would be my position, yes.
Okay. And then
we're left with the appellant's claim that there was no prejudice and silence on your part.
On this record, yes, Your Honor.
And then counsel, under your view that it is and of course, I agree that the petitioner has the burden here, ultimately. And you say the city just made a recommendation, didn't make an effort because it's not the city's job. Why is it either not an abuse of discretion by the district court or at least inadequate findings for us on appeal to actually review whether the district court abuse its discretion in its decision if the district court did not address Shetsky. So it's one thing you don't need to raise it, but doesn't the district court need to address it?
Yes, Your Honor. And if I could speak briefly to that, my reading of the Vang case, which was cited in Mr. Hang's brief, essentially seems to require more detail of the moving party, or at least of the petitioner. The similarity between this case and the Vang case would struck me in my preparation for this argument in that the moving party in the Vang case similarly had a lack of detail in its moving papers. Under the brief that our office filed, it's my understanding that the petitioner in this case simply alleged that they made reasonable efforts and didn't spell them out with particularity. For those reasons, we're asking that the court find that the district court did not abuse its discretion.
But was that rationale? I mean, is that what the district court concluded? I mean, are you just arguing that that's what one would conclude if one were to look at the record, but we don't know what the district court found with respect to the evidence submitted?
We don't. And in all candor to the court, I would concede that there is a lack of detail in this particular record. And as I think was articulated in the brief, we would ask that at a minimum that if the court feels it's appropriate, that this be remanded for findings by the district court.
Thank you, Mr. Berg. Mr. Rice, you'll have the last word.
Thank you, Your Honors. I do want to address the Vang detail issue because that has been arising in a number of cases. And going to the Vang case, in that case, the court found that the appellant did not describe its efforts in detail, instead relying on conclusory statements like that the appellant demonstrated significant mitigating factors to ensure the apprehension of the defendant. Also in that case, the appellant was seeking to have the penalty reduced based on expenses it incurred, but failed to itemize those expenses or provide sufficient detail. And so the Vang case talks about how conclusory statements in and of themselves is not sufficient. And if you're seeking to reduce a penalty or seeking to reinstate a bond based on certain things like incurring expenses, you do need to provide detail. You can't just provide assertions or allegations. In this case, Banks did provide that detail. Banks explained why it was seeking reinstatement, and that was because it contacted the defendant and brought him in and ensured that he came into custody in a timely manner. Banks is not seeking to reduce his penalty based on the expenses it incurred. And I would agree that based on this record, that would be an improper basis because we didn't put forth detail. The issue is there a baseline standard of what evidence is necessary to have reinstatement considered? For as I referenced on my opening argument is at what level of detail does a surety need to hit? Because frankly, in some cases, the level of detail provided in this affidavit has been sufficient for full reinstatement without objection. And in other cases, you know, as this has occurred on appeal for the first time, apparently the evidence is insufficient. And all we're asking is a clear standard, so we're not guessing at case by case, again, based on what prosecutor and what district judge, what detail is going to be sufficient. We need a clear standard of what evidence is necessary. And here, what we included were these specific efforts made to bring the defendant back into custody that were successful. And again, they don't require a lot of elaboration. There's not a lot of complexity to the fact of we contacted a defendant, he came into custody and he's back. And you can check that on the docket. The warrant was cleared, it was never disputed. Here's the other thing too, is the state has resources. They can go and check the custody records. They can check with the jail. They're in a position to oppose this petition. The state can say, we dispute this. We find this not credible. We raise this as an issue. Put us on notice so that way we can supplement the record or address this issue. But again, I don't think Vang stands for the proposition that you need exhaustive detail to even raise a case. What Vang says is if you want to use a specific set of facts to support reinstatement, they can't be just conclusions. They need to be actual facts, similar to kind of the plausible pleading standard for civil practice. You can't just allege a breach of contract. You need the facts that support that. And here we did provide the facts that support that. And the fact that supported it was we contacted the defendant, brought him into custody. He timely reappeared, undisputed. Again, because this case, the facts are not in dispute, because they support reinstatement, because we did everything that we could to try to anticipate concerns, to respond to concerns, to put concerns on notice, we would ask this court to either fully reinstate the bond based on the Shetsky factors or remand with instructions as to the appropriate standard and level of detail and instructions to provide that clear and consistent standard to ensure that the bond companies have sufficient notice and can raise the appropriate issues and not, in a reply brief on appeal, find new issues that are now being raised and try to guess them when it's impossible.
Thank you, Mr. Rice.